Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
All right, 720 WGN, White Sox rallying late. Coming up a little short. Good to be with you tonight, Mark Carmen. Until 1 a.m. We got the stream ready to roll tonight, Michael Heidemann. Are they hearing us?
Yeah, we be
in
streaming.
In Botswana?
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting texts from people who want to know when I'm on the air. They love this show. Even when I'm not here, but, you know, I want to make sure that...
I got three calls from Fiji earlier.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I love when Fiji calls me. Not that it's ever really happened. Fiji water is actually one of my favorite waters. Underrated water, Fiji water.
You know you're at a fancy party when they're handing you Fiji water.
Fiji water's big time. The rectangular water, Fiji, Evian, makes you feel like you're someone. We're going to talk a lot about climate tonight. Yeah, that's right. See your future, be your future. The unprecedented Democratic presidential town hall. Everyone's talking about the climate crisis. Biden, Warren, Sanders, Harris, Buttigieg, Booker, O'Rourke, Yang, Castro. I'm listening to all this audio tonight. And I got my guy Dave Rogers coming on as well, who is battling it out in North Carolina with the coal plants. It's just amazing to me. We're talking about human extinction. No more humans. Last time I looked, I'm a human. Are you a human, Heidemann?
Yeah, last time I checked.
You're a human, right? Andy Mazur was just doing the postgame show. He's a human. People that are listening, you're a human. We're debating human extinction. Do we want to be extinct? Do we want to do things that might allow us to not be extinct? Well, when are we going to be extinct? Are we going to be extinct in 100 years? Because in 100 years, I'm not going to be here, so I hope that doesn't happen and all, but it's, you know, I don't know. Maybe science is wrong. Maybe I'm sure they'll figure it out. When is that extinction exactly going to happen? I mean, I talk to people all the time, right? What about that climate change thing? It's not real. We got Hurricane Dorian flying in. We got Greenland melting. I'm walking down LaSalle Street today. For those of you in the city, there was so much soot on the ground. It was unbelievable. And I know that's from construction. I'm like, am I getting some terrible disease right now? But we're just debating it. We're debating, just debating away. This is something that should be an issue. How is this not the number one issue? How is this not the only thing that matters? I just don't get it. I do not get it. Please feel free to explain it to me. 312-981-7200. Your taxes are cool. I get it. You want to be, I know. Listen, I believe me. I haven't even paid my taxes for last year. I finally got the bill yesterday. I'm looking at, oh my God, I owe so much money. That sucks. I hate paying taxes too. I think we're all in this together. Nobody wants to pay taxes. But at the end of the day, it's money. You can't take it with you. And I know we'd all love to have more of it. And I know some people actually have real struggles with finances, putting food on the table. And that is, at that point, is the number one thing. But for the vast majority of Americans, yeah, we're doing all right. Maybe we're not the richest, but I go out on a Monday night. I see a lot of people eating out. I see people jumping into Ubers. I don't see people walking 5 miles.
Mm-hmm.
I see cabs filled up. I see people going to... I went to see Mark Knopfler Sunday night, lead singer of Dire Straits at the Chicago Theater. There wasn't five people there. The place sold out.
Yeah.
People are doing all right.
Everyone has a cell phone.
Right. Everyone's got their phone.
Yeah.
Like, literally, where was I? I was in New York. I'm in New York for the U.S. Open. I'm right by Penn Station, Madison Square Garden. And this is not the situation you want to be in. But the homeless guy, he's got his phone and it's plugged in to the outlet on the telephone pole. So even he has his phone. And listen, I know that people can be doing better. There's real things out there. But, like, when we make money, the number one thing, Brett Jackson, can you shut that door? Thank you so much. 312-981-7200. When we make money, the number one thing, it just doesn't make any sense to me. Humans are going to be extinct if we do not act, and yet we do not have the want, the energy to do it. I just find it amazing. Now, so we're going to hear from many a person tonight. Michael Adam, actually, can you cue these up? Let's hear from everyone's talking tonight. Let's start from Joe Biden was asked about climate change and what's his solutions and everything. And you know what I loved when I was a kid? You know what I loved when I was a kid, Andy Mazur? I loved trains. I loved getting on the Metra. I loved riding it down. Me and my father on a Sunday, we'd ride the train downtown, and we'd have the grilled cheese sandwich. We'd have the milkshake. We'd walk to his office. I don't know what he ever did there on a Sunday, but he did something. I would color something, leave it, and then we'd ride back on the train. That was like quality time with my father back then. So somehow I've always loved trains. You know who also loves trains? Apparently Joe Biden loves trains.
Should the U.S. ban fossil fuel exports, as some other candidates are calling for?
Well, I think we should, in fact, depending on what it is they're exporting for, what they're replacing. Everything is incremental.
Can you stop it right there, please? Can you stop right there? He didn't even answer the question. And then he just starts mumbling along about what they're this, what they're that, but then he really gets into the train thing.
I've been pushing really hard for mass transit. And for rail, we can take millions of vehicles off the road if we had high-speed rail. I've been a champion of that for the last 25 years. We know the corridors where we could do that. It would literally take millions of vehicles off the road. But you have to have a rail system that makes people say, if I get on that rail, I will get there as fast as I would have gotten had I driven.
Stop it right there. Joe. You know what I know about people? I don't know everything about people, but I know this about people. They don't want to be inconvenienced. They love paying less. If you want the rail thing to work, and people take the rail, people who ride the Metro, people ride the L, people ride trains, you really want them to ride the rail? It's got to get you there faster, and it's got to cost less. That's what it's got to be. You don't have to deal with traffic, and it gets you there quicker. If I'm really going to schedule myself that I'm going to get on this train, and it's going to leave, and it's also got to be leaving all the time. People aren't like, I'm catching the 232. That's not going to work. Does it leave every 8 minutes? Does it get me there quicker? That's what it would take for rail, which, by the way, I don't think that that's realistic. Like, I think he's living a lot. Let's hear what the rest of you had to say about this rail thing.
And I can afford to do it relative to the cost of my driving. There's a direct correlation. This is something I spent the bulk of my career on, trying to save Amtrak and a few other little things like transportation. But my point is that there are things that we can do now, that can begin to change the arc in a significant way. And as we, in fact, invest in the science and the technology and the changes that are available and will come to fruition, in fact, we can make it significantly better.
Yeah. Okay, so I don't know if you want to tell everybody that you spent the bulk of your career trying to save Amtrak. If I was running for president, that's not something I would fly up. I mean, I don't know if you've ridden on Amtrak lately, but Amtrak is not a very efficient. It doesn't smell particularly good, and the food's terrible. And it costs way too much money. I don't know how Amtrak survives.
And it's putting all the other important things to the side. It's like it's making everything seem a little bit less than the Amtrak problem that we have going on, too.
Right. Well, here's the thing. Joe. Let's make it simple. We need to have the most efficient electrical cars on the planet. That's what we should be putting our money into. We cannot continue to use fossil fuels and gas. It's terrible for the climate. We're all going to be extinct. We need electric cars. We need them to be efficient. We need to continue to put more money in that and make it very accessible. So if you have an electric car, there isn't one charging port in all of Chicago that you can access. It needs to be easy. That's what needs to happen. This is not rocket science. Rail's cool. I like trains too. But we're all not going to start riding trains. Unless, I just don't see it. So it's like, I'm trying to, like, when I'm listening to these people talk, can I get somebody who just feels like they're in touch? And him flying up there that I love rail and I tried to save it. I'm like, okay, Joe, this is not going to resonate. People aren't going to be like, sweet, rail.
You know who is making a difference, though, on the rail is Elon Musk. I mean, he said he wanted to build that super train that was going to go underneath California, or the bullet train that was going to go from California to New York. And that's cool. That I jump on that train. I want to try that, like, sleek.
Listen, that's great. If you can make a bullet train that goes from California to New York and it's faster than an airplane and it gets you there and it's safe and it's cost effective, I'm in, man. I'm going in, if I can go to New York in an hour instead of 2 hours on a plane, and we're not using the airplane fuel that we use, which is terrible for the environment too. I'm in. I'm 100% in. But I just, it's like you say things that are going to resonate. Telling everybody that you're super into rail, I don't know. When I was listening to it, I'm like, I don't think this is right. This is not what we're gonna do. Now I'm gonna play Elizabeth Warren. I'm gonna play Andrew Yang and play Kamala Harris. All coming up here, and the phone number is 312-981-7200. Do we need a break here, Michael Hanneman?
Yes, we do.
We do. All right. Hey, watch for Chicago's very own stories with Mike and Joe. Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, weeknights on WGN TV News at 9. We'll take some calls. We'll hear some more people here coming back, and then my guy Dave Rogers will be with us. Dave is a fascinating guy, and I think you'll really enjoy the conversation. Dave is. He's the deputy regional director for the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign, which is a whole thing that we need to move forward from. So that's coming up to 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Hope you're having a great Wednesday. I see you out there, text line. And all you people who don't believe in global warming, I got it. 847. It's another redistribution scheme brought to you by the abortion is in the Constitution crowd. Green New Deal's about socialism, not about climate. Way to go, 847. I got you. You're my guy. It's not real. Doesn't exist. I hear you, man. The immense physical destruction on the Bahamian islands of Baco and the Grand Bahama can easily be seen from the air, but officials are now only beginning to grasp the devastating personal toll for families who have lost loved ones in Hurricane Dorian. I know! It's got nothing to do with climate change. I know. I got you. The killer storm, the strongest ever to make landfall in the country. That's a coincidence. Has nothing to do with climate change. It's just a coincidence. Wiped out many homes and, in some cases, entire neighborhoods were mashed into rubble. The death toll from the storm jumped Wednesday from 7 to at least 20. That's a fluke. It has nothing to do with it. How about this next text? I mean, it's incredible. Let's see. Top 10 global warming lies that may shock you. James Taylor wrote this. Let's see here for Forbes. Global warming alarmists frequently make false and deplorable assertions. For example, but the Environment Defense Fund's recent fundraising mailer, 10 Global Warming Effects That May Shock You. Let's see. Well, let me be shocked here. Alarmist assertion number one. Bats dropped from the sky. In 2014, a scorching summer heat wave caused more than 100,000 bats to literally drop dead and fall from the sky in Queensland, Australia. The facts. Global warming alarmists' preferred electricity source, wind power, kills nearly 1 million bats every year in the United States alone. This appalling death toll occurs every year, even while wind power produces just 3% of the U.S. electricity. Well, that was back in 2014, so that continues to rise. I don't know how many bats are dying from wind power, but if we're going to lose a couple bats along the way here to keep the humans alive, you know what? I can live with that one. Edwin, welcome to WGN, 312-981-7200. What's up, Edwin?
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I agree with you totally about convenience. I'm up in Wisconsin. I take the Metro, and the inconvenience is the parking. In some of the suburban locations, it takes about six city blocks to park your car and walk to the train, with the exception of Palatine. They have that stackable garage. So, again, there's a big inconvenience. If I'm faced with a six-block walk and I'm running late, guess what? I'll drive, which is really a difficult thing to do. I'd rather take the Metro. But, again, we need, as you say, convenience. And, oh, boy, I rode the rails with my dad in the 50s when there were linen tablecloths and the big gauge cars and the sleepers. And, boy, where does the standard end? Where does it end? And look at today. It's Greyhound on the tracks and Greyhound in the sky. This is absolutely terrible. But you're right about convenience, and you're right about Metro. It stinks. It smells. In fact, some of the luxury coaches are better than some of the Amtrak coaches, because I took it as a family thing. We took one of the deluxe cabins, and I'll tell you, we couldn't get two people in there unless we greased ourselves up and got pushed through the door. That's how small and inconvenient it was. So convenience is important, and we're not getting convenience. We're getting squeezed every day with inconvenience.
Right. Well, Edwin, let me talk to you about, I hear what you're saying, and I said it myself. Right. That's what we are into. We want things to be easy. We are spoiled. We want to have the parking spot right next to the train. We want the train to come right when we get there, and when we get on the train, we want it to smell like it's the cleanest that anything can ever be. I get it. But you know what would be really inconvenient? If about 50 million, or let's not say 50 million, let's call it 10 million people are displaced, and all of a sudden they're living in the same city because they can't live in their current area, say in the Middle East, because of climate change. That would be worse than the train, right? Parking six blocks. I mean, that's what we're up against, man. Mm-hmm. It could be a lot worse than just the six blocks. But
oh, sure.
But I hear what we're on the same team here.
Right. Exactly.
If you're going to invest in rail, part of that would be investing in making it as easy as possible to park as well. You're right. You're absolutely right, Ed.
Right. You got to do the total package. If you haven't got the total package, you're back where you started.
Right.
You haven't gotten any inconvenience.
Yep.
I think, as a matter of fact, when I pass Mount Prospect, I think it's like a seven city walk if you get the last parking spot to get to the station. What's the word convenience of that?
Yeah, and Edwin, I appreciate the phone call. That's actually a good sign that people are willing to park seven blocks away and walk because they don't want to deal with traffic, which is another thing that's being considered in the city as far as, are we going to have a congestion tax? And perhaps when you're driving during rush hour, you might have to pay to do so, which would suck, but might be something we have to do. Welcome to London. 312-981-7200. One guy that made a whole lot of sense tonight, I thought, and this is like, it doesn't even take a lot to make sense, but I thought Andrew Yang talking about water. I like water. Do you like water? I think water is good. We all want clean water, right, Andrew Yang?
We need to do much more. I'm the parent of two young boys, one of whom is autistic. And as a parent, when you have your kids drinking water or using various toys and household items, there's always something in the back of your mind, which is this safe? And I just came from Flint, and while this is a separate issue, it's kind of the same in the sense that the folks in Flint discovered that their water was toxic after the fact and are still recovering. So to me, safe drinking water is a fundamental human right, and that if you're an American, you should not be stressed out about the water that you are drinking and your kids are drinking. And this is, again, the problem with having the almighty dollar running our society, where people look up and say, oh, replacing the pipes is expensive, or, oh, another substance would be more expensive. Are you kidding me? You know what's expensive? Poisoning our kids.
Yes.
So there, that's how short-sighted we are, right? Well, fixing those pipes are real. That's going to cost a lot of money. I'm not sure how we're going to get that done. Well, there might be some lead that could go into the water, but let's hope that that doesn't happen, and let's kick the can down the road and not do that. What was the outcome of that? I don't know. 6,000 to 12,000 children were exposed to lead in the water. Who knows what that's going to mean for their life? Don't really care. I mean, maybe we care a little bit, but we didn't care enough to let it happen, right? Flint water crisis started in 2014. I don't want to be Johnny Negative here, but just I think it's just amazing that a guy can actually get up there. He's trying to run for the most powerful position in the history of the planet, and he's running on the, and he can just be as basic as, you know what's cool? Drinking water. I want to be able to drink water. And people are like, yes, yes, that's important. Like, that's where we're at. Like, that does it not feel like life 101? Am I nuts? To me, it's just kind of amazing that that's where the conversation is, that we're arguing about whether or not we should take care of the water supply. Is this 1742 or is this 2019? I'm confused. 312-981-7200. All right. We'll get checking news coming up here, and then my guy Dave Rogers will be with us after 11 o'clock. And then we're going to lighten it up. Miller Lite going down Negro Modelo on the way up. This is amazing. This is incredible. There is big news in the beer drinking world as well. 720 WGN. Little George Thurgood. Feel like I'm on the Rokan show right now, filling in for Kevin Pyle doing sports, and it's Friday. But there are a few professions where I've reached the pinnacle. Now, I've mentioned this before, and it seems appropriate to mention it again now. The only profession where I have ever risen from the bottom to the top, still fighting in this media thing, trying to make my way, fingers crossed, one day I will be at the mountaintop of some, whatever you would call it, radio station, media conglomerate.
You're pretty close.
I'm right there. Right. Thank you, Michael Heidemann. I really appreciate that. But the one place where I did rise up from the bottom, from cotton candy, two hot dogs, two peanuts, Left Turn malt cups, Dove bars, all the way to the prized Budweiser and Miller Lite was the vending profession, where at both then Comiskey Park and Wrigley Field, I sweated it out for years trying to make it in radio and at the same time trying to make more money, and finally got to the top and got the red tub at Wrigley, which is Budweiser, and the black tub at Comiskey, which was a Miller Lite, and you would take out 3 6-packs of Miller Lite and 1 6-pack of MGD, and everybody would want Miller Lite to the point that they'd be like, yeah, let me get a light. And I might have a couple times perhaps poured the old MGD that I still had left in there and pass it down the road, because you're really not going to notice, are you? That's your fifth beer. You really don't know. It all tastes the same. That's not terrible, is it, Heinemann?
No, because it does all taste the same.
Yeah, you know, yeah, a little more calories for you.
You never were caught, were you?
No, not fully caught. Did you? Is this a light or is this a trap? It's a light. It's definitely a light. 100% light. No. It's a trap. Okay. Send it back. I'm telling you, it's a light. But here, I'll give you a new one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then I put that back into the tub, and then the next person would order, and I would just hand it down. And what a bad person! I've matured from those younger years. The mm-hmm. point that I'm bringing this up is because there's a piece in the Tribune today, Chicago. Long a Miller stronghold, this is the headline, has a new top-selling beer. Modelo Especial is now the city's new sales crown. Can you believe this? This seems seismic. This is
huge.
This is a major, major shift. And they write it, after years as a stronghold for Miller Lite, Chicago has become increasingly thirsty for a feisty challenger, Modelo Especial, which this year marked a major local milestone when it surpassed Miller Lite in dollar sales. Now, I want to talk to you, 312-981-7200. I know there are some loyal Miller Lite drinkers who, despite all the craft beers, despite all the tremendous innovations that have come in the last decade in beer drinking, you stick to what you've done your entire life. Miller Lite. Tastes great, less filling, Rodney Dangerfield, the whole thing. And then there's the other side. I mean, old school argument, south side Miller Lite, north side Budweiser. Give me the Bud Light. Now, Bud Light is coming in at here, we should do the numbers here. They, Modelo Especial sales in Chicago were $70.5 million over 52 weeks that ended on August 11th. Miller Lite, $67.6 million. Can we just think about that number for just a second? $70.5 million was spent on Modelo Especial last year. Think about that. $70.5 million in just Chicago alone was spent on buying that beer. Think about that.
It's crazy. I'd like to know which neighborhood these are happening in, too. Modelo.
$67 million in Miller Lite. Bud Light is at $41.25 million. Let's do that math. 70 plus 67, I believe that's 137. Throw in another, let's call it 42. That is, what are we at there? Let's just call it a rough $180 million we've spent on three beers. Maybe I'm doing the wrong business here. I mean, unbelievable how much money's being spent. But regardless, we are shifting over to the Modelo. And our people... Have you left what you've drinking your whole life? Is there a maturing process? Like, I feel like, I feel like you are a mature, changing, evolving, what you were drinking at Southern Utah University in your younger, primer, collegiate superstar years. It's probably different today as a veteran radio professional producer, host. I know you had the overnight show the other on Saturday night. I mean, have things changed for you?
Wow. Well, you know, with all that underneath my belt, yes, a lot of things have changed. I mean, you can't really go out and order a big glass of Fireball with ice at a bar and look distinguished, I suppose.
Fireball with ice, that is a bold order right there. Good for you.
But, you know, I've stuck with the Miller Lite for years. And it's, you know, if you grow up on the border of Wisconsin or you grow up in any of the suburbs, you're seeing Miller Lite flow like a waterfall.
So you're still there?
I'm still there. Well, if you're thinking about it, you know, the great Jackie Paulus once told me, who used to work here at WGN, the Miller Lite is the perfect cruiser beer. You sip on it throughout the night. It doesn't get you too drunk. You can rock through the evening to have like six, and you still are just getting a slight buzz.
Okay, that's well said. A good cruiser beer.
Yeah. Which remains my favorite.
Well, right. It tastes like water.
Yeah.
It doesn't really. It doesn't take a whole lot to. Be involved.
Mm-hmm. You order it. It looks cool.
Right.
No one's going to give you any guff about it.
See, now I disagree with that. Like, if I see someone drinking a Miller, if you walk up to you walk up to any bar, let me get a Miller Lite. I'm like, I mean, my initial reaction is, are you kidding? Do you see that there's 58 other options here? Branch out, try something new, live life on a slightly more dangerous level. Maybe you'll experience something. But like, that's how Miller Lite people are. Mm-hmm. They know what they like and they just stick in their lane. You're a know what you like, stick in your lane. This is my routine. You probably walk the same way to work every day, don't you? You walk the same way to work. Admit it.
Surprisingly, yesterday I did walk a different way.
You walked it. Okay.
It ended up being a terrible day.
You have a tuna salad sandwich for lunch. You have the same thing for lunch, I'm guessing, at least 3 days of the week.
I do love tuna.
See, there you go. They're okay.
You called me out. You got me pegged, Mark. But you say that, cause especially in Chicago where we have so many craft beer options. I mean, this is like a beer mecca right now.
Right.
Every single bar you go to, the taps are just flowing. You see like hundreds of different styles and types of beer.
Would you buy a marijuana style cannabis drink that comes out of the tap in a bar if we get to that point of legalization? I'm asking for a friend.
Is it going to get me high? Am I going to?
Yes, you're going to have a little bit of a buzz from it. That's the point. So
you know what? I'm always open to new things. I mean, why not try it? You only live once. You can't do Miller Lite every single time.
I'm aware of one potential IPA IPO. Excuse me, not IPA. IPO out there where they're wanting to make the cannabis beer drink.
Wow,
is that interesting?
I think they're cornering all the markets.
Right. They're right. And I think people will do it. 312-981-7200. We're talking beer drinking habits here. We're not tasting any beers today. I'm not doing that. It's a sober show. 11:15 at night. We're keeping things on the road here. But I think this is huge. Modelo Especial is the highest grossing beer in Chicago. And you're right here. Who just texted in? 309 texting. Modelo sells at a higher wholesale price. That is correct. Sheer volume, Miller Lite still does beat Modelo Especial. You are correct, 309. But total dollars, Modelo gets the crown. I love a Modelo. I think Modelo is delicious.
You do?
I like it, yeah.
I've never seen anyone drink a Modelo ever.
That's the other thing, too. Like, I like it, but I don't think it's like some... First of all, I don't think it's like... great. I think it's good. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that many people drinking Modelo. Where is this going on? Where are these people? Who are these people?
You know, I did the math, and it looks like at $6 a beer, you're drinking 11,666,666 beers in Chicago every single year of Modelo. That's...
Wait, just, say that again. How many Modelo beers is it?
Over a million. Almost 12 million.
Almost 12 million Modelos.
Yeah. At $6 a piece.
630 texting, my neighbors and I switched to Modelo 5 years ago. We are in our 50s. We live in Wheaton. It tastes great. Try it. I have tasted it. I do like it. I'm not dogging Modelo. I'm just, if I was going to bet on something overtaking Miller Lite, it would not have been Modelo Especial.
Is
that
no.
Not at all. I would have thought that would have been like, I don't know, 42nd on the list.
No Corona, no Budweiser,
Corona,
Coors.
Where's a Heineken in the mix? Heineken's,
yeah.
I mean, I would have thought like 312 would have been
easily
right.
Goose Island, right here in Chicago. What about Revolution?
Right. I mean, so many candidates here.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's a Wheaton thing.
You think it's a Wheaton thing? You think everybody out in Wheaton is just crushing down Modelos?
It could be a Wheaton, Naperville, you know, all the suburbs of Chicago could be really pounding them down and really keeping them at the top of the game.
Modelo sales, the Tribune writes, have been particularly strong over the past couple of years when the brand broadened its target beyond core Hispanic customers and started marketing in English to a general audience. And here's Greg Gallagher, the head of brand marketing for Casa Modelo, who probably just got himself a fairly significant raise. Quote, we are not just an Hispanic brand anymore. We still have a ton of loyalty and are very true to our Hispanic origins and our core. But we are seeing the crossover happen into the general market. And that is what's going to propel us into the future. Well, good job there, Sir Greg. See your future, be your future. Selling to more than Latinos was a smart move. I bet you he got a hefty raise for that one. I could have told you that. It almost rewinds back to our conversation about the climate and Andrew Yang making his money tonight on clean water. I think it's important that we all are able to drink clean water. Yes, absolutely. And this was smart, too. All right. Glenn, you got a thought on Modelo? 312-981-7200. What's up, Glenn?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, man.
I just looked it up to see who makes Modelo. Anheuser-Busch.
Of course. Of course.
So it's just a branding. It's just a branding. And then, yeah, they obviously they're going for the Hispanic. They just changed the name because I wouldn't drink Bush either, but I just thought that was odd, you know, or curious. Me, I'm a Lineage drinker myself, but, go Berry Weiss.
Yeah, Glenn, you had a couple Lineage tonight, perhaps, or how you doing over there?
No.
I'm driving.
Uh-oh. No, I'm driving semi. No,
oh, okay.
I'd be in deep doo doo trouble if I was drinking when driving.
Yeah, don't do that.
But,
where are you driving, Glenn?
I'm coming through Chicago area like I do every night.
Yeah, what do you got in the hall?
On my way to Munster.
Okay, what's in the old? You got a 53 footer there, Glenn?
Yes, sir. I got a load of Pepsi.
Load of Pepsi.
Yeah.
All right. You know, I worked in the trucking world for a little bit, Glenn, as a transportation broker. You guys don't like the brokers all too much. In fact, you hate us, as you should, by the way.
Well, everyone's got to make a buck. I don't deal with brokers. I'm a company driver.
Okay. Okay.
So.
Thanks, Glenn.
Hey, you're welcome. Have a nice evening.
Yeah, you as well, sir. Appreciate
you
calling.
All right. Bye.
312-981-7200, Glenn out there. And anybody impressed that I was able to say 53-footer? Heidemann, did you know that I had that in my arsenal?
No idea.
That's what I'm talking about, Adam Phillips. 18 wheels on the 53-footer. You got to slide the tandem sometimes when you're, you know, having a little bit of an issue with the balance of the truck. See? It all comes full circle.
Was this another job you had in your past, too?
Yes. This is when I had the midlife crisis at 28, 29, got out of radio. I was dating someone at the time. She's like, you need to make money. I'm like, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I do. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to find something. Maybe I should go into sales. And the next thing you knew, I was doing transportation logistics. One of the worst jobs in the entire planet, but those guys make a bunch of dough. Get in there at 6 in the morning, 7 in the morning, work for 10 hours. You call up transportation guys, where are your trucks? And then you got to get them to where they want to go. Any interest in going to Alabama? You want to go over to, how about California? Out to Carolina? Then you put the two and two thing together and you make money on the, you pay the truck this, you pay, the customer pays that, you split the middle, everybody gets rich. Backhaulers, one of the more brilliant businesses of all time. These guys realized that you'd have a trucking company in Chicago who would ride out to North Carolina. They take a load from Chicago, whatever, like, hey, Sears would say, can you ride this stuff out to our thing in Carolina? And then they would drive back empty. So nothing's on the truck coming back. And wow. These guys realized that, you know what, they're coming back for free. They would take, way less coming back because they're not getting anything. And then they realized, well, you know, these people in Carolina who are paying stuff coming to Chicago, they would probably like to pay less for that load that they're sending. And these guys got beyond rich. Come up with an idea, make a lot of money, and then give back to society. Clean water. That's the full circle of the conversation. Quick timeout, 720 WGN. I don't know if I know this Miller Lite song at all. Actually, I know I don't know this Miller Lite song at all.
Miller Lite song. This is by C.W. McCall, Convoy. It's a trucker song.
I thought it said Miller Lite all night. Am I hearing things?
Well, in fact, this song was written about a guy who was hauling Miller Lite.
Oh, okay. He's hauling Miller Lite, not drinking Miller. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All comes together.
Okay. I got it now. I got it. interesting text coming in here on the old beer drinking. See, I wanted to get some passion on this. It's 6:08. I feel you. Whatever beer is on sale that week is my favorite. I feel you, sir. You get that Busch Light and you live that dream if it's on sale. Gets the job done. I get you. 847 Bud Light Platinum rules. Okay. I'm not gonna talk down your beer there. If you think Bud Light Platinum rules, you go get it. Never tried it, so I can't really say. 630. Whatever happened to Rolling Rock that was so popular in the 90s? That's true. Rolling Rock had a great run there. The green bottle, you felt like you were getting sort of a premium beer, even though you were paying close to the cheapest prices possible. You sort of felt like, look at this Rolling Rock. Like you had found something that was different and was on the cusp of greatness. But then I just got tired out on Rolling Rock. Those are my college years right there.
Did you ever have the Ice House?
That's so nasty.
Yeah.
So nasty.
That was one of the first. I mean, you were almost like welcomed in with a nice house back in the burbs.
Text line from Renee says her husband is the lone man who still likes Miller High Life, the champagne of beers. I am with anybody who is on the champagne of beers. I think Miller High Life is the most delicious domestic product you can get. I love the bottle. I love everything about it. Miller High Life is an excellent, excellent choice and a great value choice. The fact that you can go and get a 12-pack of Miller High Life for $6.99 at your local Jewel, I think that is like the steal of all steals. I mean, I would rather drink a High Life than like a Corona, which is double. I love High Life. Mm-hmm. I'm a big High Life guy. Not that I'm, you know, I don't want to misrepresent her. I'm not like, you know, drinking beer every night. I'm a professional. I get my rest. I drink coffee. I have a lot of water. I'm well hydrated.
Yeah, but if you're at a barbecue, you're going to be getting up that highlight.
Right,
you're with your friends.
I love a highlight.
It's a day off.
And I also, what's the Wisconsin beer? I was just up in Wisconsin, saw Mark Knopfler at the Riverside Theater.
There's Sheep's Head. There is
No. The cow, Spotted Cow.
Spotted Cow. Yes,
that thing is flat out delicious. Mm-hmm. That is a delicious choice. Zach, welcome to WGN, 312-981-7200. My name's Mark Carmen. Go ahead.
Hi, yeah. I just had a funny story. Well, kind of sad and funny.
Okay.
My mom recently passed at the beginning of summer in June.
Sorry to hear that.
And, well, thanks. And she was strictly Miller Lite drinker, and I was strictly a Bud Light drinker, and we'd give each other crap over it all the time. And after she passed, I don't know what happened. I strictly drink Miller Lite now. Like, I don't even touch Bud Light. I think it's gross.
Aw, that's beautiful, Zach.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you want to honor your mom. It gives you a little bit of connection to her. I get it.
Yeah, I feel like she's drinking it through me now. Yeah. Like, she's like, now you're drinking this now.
Yeah, so you can have a little bit of conversation there. I'm having a Miller Lite tonight, Mom. That's sweet, man.
Yeah.
Good for you. And I mean, that shows that you really loved your mom because you left your beer to be with her. I mean, that's big time right there, Zach. So I don't want to downplay that in any way, okay?
Yeah. I just see you guys were talking about Miller Lite, and I'm like, oh, I got a good story.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing, man. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
312-981-7200. Let me sneak one more in here real quick. Steve, go ahead, man.
Hey, how are you guys doing tonight?
Good, Steve.
Good, man. Hey, I was wondering if you've had Natter Days yet. Natural Light.
Natter Days by Natural Light? By Natural Light?
Natural Light. It's like the cheapest, like, hobo homeless beer ever.
Natter Days
somehow,
by Natty Light. I haven't had it, man. I don't know if I ever will, but are you telling me that I should try it?
It's good. It's like a great summer beer. It's like a strawberry lemonade mixed with beer, so it's kind of the summer shandy-ish type of thing, but I'm telling you, it's got a little sweet to it, but it's a nice hot day, about 3 or 4 or 12 of those, they go down pretty good.
You know, Carm, I read about this, actually, and I think that they're doing this because of to combat the White Claw obsession that's going on right now.
So okay.
Sure.
It's gonna hit
and, hey, the can is pink, and it's got pink flamingos on it. I mean, it's awesome. I mean, it's summer in a can. You can't beat it.
Oh, Steve, I will. I'm putting it down. Do you follow me on Twitter, Steve, or Instagram?
I don't have Twitter or the gram.
What about Facebook?
I can't believe I just said the gram. No, I have Facebook.
All right, if I do this, Steve, I'll put a picture up on Facebook and I'll tag you #Steve.
Do
okay.
That.
All right.
Do that.
You got.
All right, guys.
You got it, my friend. All right.
Thanks. Bye.
312-981-7200. I might have to update what's going on with my tennis coaching gig coming back here. Vic Vaughn, I apologize. We have this intercom system here, and I was trying to talk to Michael Heidemann, and he's normally on the button, but I had just talked to Vic during news, and then I hit the wrong button. So if anybody's really paying attention to Vic's news, they might have heard a pause there, and that was my fault.
We all enjoyed it. Short little intermission in the news.
Thank you, Vic. Hope everyone's having a great night. Good to be with you here till 1 o'clock. All right. I got an opportunity for you. Now, if you listened to the show last week when I was on, I think it was on Friday night that I talked about this, that I got a text and someone was asking me, do you, Mark Carmen, want to be the head men's and women's tennis coach for a prominent university in the state of Illinois? I get this text. Do you, Carmen, who I've never coached on the high school level, the junior high level, the kindergarten level, let alone the college level, or the, if there isn't, I suppose there is a professional level, professional players, world team tennis. I've never, but this is, but he knows that I love tennis, and they're looking for a positive guy to come in there and rally the team, and it's not all about wins and losses, but it's about, you know, getting better and just creating a positive environment. And so I'm like, you know, I got this radio thing going on. I got this video thing going on. I'm a pretty busy guy. I don't know if I can give up my career or sidestep on my career, give away some time on the air to coach tennis. So I started reaching out. I've been reaching out to my friends this week in the tennis community, guys that are pros, guys like my brother. He played number one at the University of Chicago. I'm reaching out all over the place trying to get this position filled. And true story, at 11:37 at night here on Wednesday night, September the 4th, I haven't found anybody. Now, the position does not pay a whole ton of money, but it's still available. And so what I figured is that, you know what, I can't do this gig by myself, but I can do some of the gig, be a head tennis coach on the men's and women's level, on the collegiate level here. Now, we're not going to get rich doing this, but it does have a significant, you know, it's got a salary. So what I would like to throw out to the text line here and the phone number, 312-981-7200, is I need an assistant, somebody who will work with me. Most of the matches are in March and in April. You will be my assistant, and we will split up the duties of when we're at practice and who's driving the team out to the meets. And we will, and I want somebody who's going to be super positive, and we are going to lift. I can't say the university, but we're going to lift this university up to levels that it has never seen before. We're going to go out into the Chicagoland and Midwest area. We're going to recruit a little bit. We're going to bring in some talented women. We're going to bring in some talented men, and we are going to win some tennis matches. So I am looking right now, true story, on WGN for somebody who would like to partner with me and be a tennis coach. You know, you don't need to know a whole lot. I just need somebody positive. I need somebody with integrity. I need somebody who will be accountable. I need somebody who can connect with an 18 to 22-year-old. 312-98. Now, you do have to work with me. 312-981-7200. Nobody right now is dying to jump in on this. And maybe you're just intimidated by the whole tennis thing.
So is that the criterion that you need to be positive, have integrity?
This is my criteria. Mm-hmm. You would be my assistant. Do you have any interest, Michael Heidemann?
Oh, you're asking me?
Well, sure, why not? I mean, I'm throwing it out there to anyone right now.
Well, I think it'd be a great, great opportunity to work with the CARM. I mean, you're known for your great work. You're on the radio, and you're a great tennis player. I think that molding young minds would be an amazing opportunity for most people in the Chicagoland area.
What are your qualifications?
I can drink like a whole pack of Miller Lite if you just put it in front of me. But I might not be the best candidate, but I think that there's a lot of people out there who want to dial in and find out.
Well, we'll see here. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Heidemann can drink a whole lot of Miller Lite. Vic Vaughn, you got any interest there in the newsroom? You want to be a tennis coach?
I was trying to finish this story and get away from the camera before you asked, but
well, I figured you were still sitting there because deep down somewhere you wanted to be asked.
No, I'm writing a story.
No.
You know, it's interesting actually. I'm not going to shoot it down and say I'm not. No, it's an interesting thing. I love this. I want to see where it goes.
Right.
I don't have a car, so I'm not a very good candidate right off the bat. Must have a car, right?
Well, I don't know. You have to have a car. Because I do have a car, and I do work in the city, so I don't necessarily need a car. Like, I haven't moved my car for 3-4 days. I like to walk, I like to take Uber.
In that woman's spot, I know.
Right, right, exactly.
Now, can the players or students, like, if I take this, can they give me a ride if I needed to go somewhere? Just asking.
I think that's on the table, sure. And as we were talking about earlier in the show, you know, Joe Biden's talking about he loves rail. Maybe you just take the train on out there. I mean, I believe like when the team goes to like let's say we got to go to Iowa for a meet. And the university is going to provide us with a van.
I see.
You know, we're going to have all that. You just get, you know, so, but
this is fascinating that this just fell out of the sky onto your lap. This is really fascinating.
I'm asking people, everyone say no. It's like, you know what? I'm not going to say no. I'm going to get myself a partner and we're going to get this done. I just don't know who that is yet. Dave, 312-981-7200. Dave, you want to be my assistant coach?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
What
Carm, I am probably the most positive I have a lot of integrity. I homeschool my kids for lots of years, and right now I work two jobs. One of them is a substitute teacher. I do a lot of PE coaching. The homeschool kids at the co-op call me Coach Dave or Coach Roller. I played tennis 30 years ago, so I probably didn't forget much.
Uh-huh.
And I'm encouraging. I love kids. I'd love to be your assistant coach.
How old are you, Dave? I don't mean to be an ageist here, but that's under my...
I am 54, but I'll be 55 when the season starts.
Did I just break an HR rule by asking how old you are, Heidemann?
Well, if no, you're hiring you're him, fine. It might be underneath some paperwork or something.
Right,
but
right, right.
Pretty, but
right
I think
now,
you're safe.
Right now we're just having a conversation. Mm-hmm. So you're 50. I like that. That's a perfect age range for me, Dave. Because you've been through the ringer, and I love that you're a substitute teacher. You understand the youth of America, right?
Yeah, and I can get days off for the meet. So
right, what's your schedule look like in March and April?
You tell me what cities we need to be at, and that's my schedule.
This is the attitude I'm looking for here. What about fast food on the road here, Dave? Because we're probably gonna have to get some pop-in meals. What do you like?
Just about everything, but I probably pack some lunches. Try to eat healthy. And we are gonna be influencing men and women. We just can't do fast food all the time. We're not going to win many games.
Oh, this is what, Dave, you're raising the bar. I was willing to go fast food the whole time, and now you're going to pack some PB&J, and maybe we'll have some grapes and some nuts. I like this, Dave. All right. I'm going to put you on hold here, and Michael's going to take your information, and we'll go from there. Okay, hang on.
All right, thanks.
312-981-7200. I've been offered, if you're just joining us, to be a head men's and women's tennis coach on the collegiate level. This is not... Everything I'm saying right now is true. Now, I haven't gotten the job officially, but I think I can get it. And if I'm going to get it, I need an assistant because I can't fully commit. I don't... My passion is to the broadcast world. I don't want to give up my shifts on WGN. I want to be here. But I am willing to do my very best to be in to cover both duties here, and so I need an assistant. 312-981-7200. 773's texting in. I am ready. Played Division I on a full and very positive. However, I got an offer to coach at the University of Hawaii, but it did not pay enough to live in Hawaii. Interesting, 773. So I mean, this is not going to make you rich. We don't have a big salary here, and assuming that we're going to split it, this is going to be something that will, give you a little extra money to go to the movies here. But we're not. But since you're here, maybe it could be a good way to get that coaching career off the ground. 312-981-7200. Will you be my assistant tennis coach? Things you don't hear on every radio station, but you hear it right here. What's up, Dustin? Welcome to WGN.
Hey.
Yes.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good.
What do you got? What are your qualifications, Dustin? What can you bring to the table?
I played a little bit of junior college tennis. I'm 32, so I can relate with the younger crowd. A brother of mine played at Lake Forest, so he gets me out on the court every now and then.
Where'd you play JUCO?
College of Lake County.
I like it. Local. That means you know the talent in the area.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite of the Big Four? Nadal, Federer, Djokovic, or Andy Murray? Who I guess I can still throw in the Big Four even though.
Oh, can I go Leighton Hewitt?
Wow. 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 Leighton Hewitt out of nowhere.
Yes, sir.
You know that I have something in common with Leighton Hewitt, Dustin.
Okay.
Leighton Hewitt had to have his toe fused. Because he had no cartilage in his right big toe, and he went and he got that procedure done, and he still was able to play and win I believe he won a Grand Slam, or he's like, if not, he was maybe in the quarterfinals with a fused toe. And I thought, and I thought for a little bit ago that I was going to have to fuse my own toe, though I got some good orthotics, but I basically have the same injury as Leighton Hewitt. So the fact,
gotcha.
the fact that you just threw out Leighton Hewitt, who's a tremendous competitor, Australia, got all the way to number one in the world, that's an awesome name. All right, Dustin, hang on. We're going to take your information here.
Thank you.
This is getting exciting. Guy just dropped Leighton Hewitt out of nowhere. It's my toe guy.
These guys keep getting better and better and better.
I mean,
it's a tough choice.
Well, we got Dave and we got Dustin. I'd like to get a couple more, mm-hmm. candidates. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got to get...
I got you.
You got me, you got Vic.
Vic didn't want in.
Oh, he didn't want in.
Vic starts throwing out all these cars and travel and he's... Let's see here. 847, Carm, you just described Bill Leff. You know, Bill is an interesting candidate, actually. But see, the problem with Bill is if you put Bill Leff as the assistant coach, all he would want to do is play the players and beat them. I mean, he might ruin morale. Bill Leff is one of the most competitive people I've ever been around in my life. You play ping pong with Bill Leff, the dude sweats like it's 110 degrees out and he's going for the win. The man's amazing. I love him. He's an inspiration. But as a coach, I don't know. We have to discuss this. Let me get Jim in on here. 312-981-7200. Do you want to be my assistant tennis coach? We're going to coach men's and women's tennis on the collegiate level. What's up, Jim?
I do not want to be your assistant tennis coach. I want to be your assistant broadcaster when you're not able to do the broadcasting.
You want to sit in this chair when I'm gone to do this show, Jim?
Absolutely.
What are your qualifications?
He's spinning the table.
What do you got?
I'm a communication major in college. I've done a lot of broadcasting when I was much younger. I'm 56 years old now.
Uh-huh.
I'm pretty articulate. Uh-huh. I can talk on any subject, and I think you're looking at it the wrong way. Don't get an assistant coach. Get an assistant broadcast partner. I don't need a lot of money.
Uh-huh.
I just need whatever money is available when I'm doing the job.
What would be your number one thing you'd be discussing tonight on WGN Radio, Jim?
I can discuss anything. Politics. I'm not a Donald Trump supporter. I'm a Cub fan. I'm a Bear fan. I'm a Chicago guy. I've lived here my whole life. I'm a Chicago police officer. I can give you perspective on anything you want. Anything you need, you give me the subject, I'll give you the content.
Interesting. Okay, upper management might be listening now, Jim.
That's fine.
How will you connect with the WGN listeners?
How will I connect? I've been listening to WGN my whole life since my mom listened to Wally Phillips in the early 70s. I'm a Chicago guy. I love Chicago. I love the city. I understand the problems that we have with the violence and everything else. I can rock on any subject. I can articulate any subject, and anybody who calls in, I courteous, listen to their subject. I won't demean them. I'll give my opinion. They can give theirs, and we will rock.
What can Mark Carman do better on the air?
What can he do better on the air?
Yeah. Well, give me some constructive criticism here, Jim. Let's step into the PD chair.
Just be more Mark Carman.
Wow.
Discuss your opinion. I love Mark Carman, everything he does. I think he gives great perspective. I've called this station probably 100 times in my life. They always give me a voice, and I think everything on WGN is great.
All right. Thank you, Jim. That was a tremendous pitch by you. You did well.
Now, are you going to wait for me to give you my information so someone can contact me?
Sure, why not? Here, I'll put you on hold. Mike's going to talk to you. Hang on, buddy. Appreciate it.
I like what he did there.
Listen, he went for it. I thumbs up.
You did mention bold. Or did you?
Wow, 412's texting in and get Harry to coach, you fool. Some friend you are. Okay, fine. Hey, listen. Harry Tynowitz is a candidate. I didn't think of Harry. He's not really a tennis guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he would be a positive individual.
Yeah. From the sidelines, he'd be great.
Get Harry to coach, you fool. Some friend you are. That's not very nice there, 412.
It could be Harry texting in, by the way.
Nah, it's not Harry texting in. I suppose it could be. All right, let's... We got Dustin. We got why are Dustin and Dave still staying on hold?
I got to get their info. Oh, they're in it.
Okay. All right. I thought you already had it. Quick timeout. 720 WGN. So people calling in. I believe it was Cheryl that just called. Cheryl just called and said, "Why don't you get Maury?" That is not nice, Cheryl.
Who is this Maury guy?
Well, my last match of the summer in the Shoreline League, where my team was battling to make the playoffs, and I was playing number two singles, and I had just gotten back from tennis camp, where I was learning from the great Bill Perlmutter up there at Boyne Mountain, and I was trying to incorporate some new things into my game, I was battling it out with 70-year-old Maury. And I won the first set, but then I lost the second set. And we were in a 10-point tiebreaker for the decider. And I was up 7-6. And Maury hit a ball down the line. And I wasn't going to get there. Mm-hmm. But my brother was watching, and I wanted to give full effort. So I went as hard as I possibly could to get it. And I blew out my hamstring.
Smoked ya.
And I laid on the ground as 70-year-old Maury stood over me. And I defaulted, and Maury got the win. And now this person's calling in and saying, hire, get Maury to be your assistant coach. That is not nice, Cheryl, but very funny. Good call. I don't know if Maury seems like a guy that might have some time, perhaps. Not a bad idea right there.
Sounds competitive.
He's very competitive, no question. He's all that.
Merciless.
Yeah. And for the record, I signed up to be in this other tournament, and I've been delaying it because it's we get you to schedule your own matches because I got the hamstring. I'm delaying. So I come back from the U.S. Open. I'm like, all right, I'll play this guy on Labor Day. I go out and play him. I'm better than him. He's not very good. It's first round.
Mm-hmm.
Injure the hamstring again.
That's a bummer.
Right? Again? Like I'm like, and I was saying like I'm not ready to play yet. But then I felt like I had to do it, and I injured my hamstring again. All right, let us move along. Quick timeout news at the top of the hour, 720 WGN. 720 WGN. I'm always trying to raise the bar, if you will, become a tennis coach, looking for an assistant. Thank you for that conversation. Talked a little climate change tonight. So we had the CNN extraordinaire. That was exciting to see. All the candidates talking about the climate crisis. Clean water is good. So it only feels appropriate to move on to Elizabeth Alfano, who is my favorite vegan and is involved in a film that is sweeping the nation, and I believe she's on a red carpet right now out in Los Angeles, and she's hanging out with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and she's got all these strong people around her, and they don't eat meat, and all they do is eat lettuce and plants and whatnot. So, Elizabeth, welcome back to WGN. Good to have you. This seems very noisy where you're at.
Mark Carmen, let me just tell you that we vegans do not only eat lettuce, and there's a lot that I want to talk to you about. But before I get into it with you,
yeah,
I'm going to pass over heavyweight boxer Brian Jennings. He's in the film The Game Changers. He's been vegan since 2015, but he's been vegetarian since 2013. And he's going to tell you just how he works out and what he eats.
All right. Let me talk to Brian.
Hello.
Here. Thank you. Brian, good. Welcome to WGN, Brian.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
So you're in the movie The Game Changers, and you're a fighter?
Yes. Yes, I'm a professional fighter.
And what do you eat every day, Brian? Tell the world.
My favorite meal every day, you can't go wrong with it, is peanut butter and jelly. Yeah, but when all fails, you know, peanut butter and jelly. But, you know, I eat a variety of a lot of whole foods. My diet consists of about 90% whole foods and maybe 10% of processed foods, but all plant-based.
Okay, now, how old were you when you made this switch to the plant-based world?
I made the plant-based switch more so 2013, but the complete plant-based switch happened in 2015. And 2015, 4 years ago, I was like 29, 30 years old.
Okay, and how has it changed your life?
Well, it changed my life. You know, you can actually like think a lot clearer,
okay,
and a lot of the effects that I look forward to seeing in longevity. You know, I never was the type of person that, you know, that would abuse my eating habits and abuse my body in the first place. So I always took care of myself. So I'm looking forward to the longevity of being, you know, being a plant-based person. And the overnight thing is just it's not too many things that happen overnight for a person like me who's already been disciplined. But you know, it's all about the longevity of being a plant-based individual.
Have you been able to add muscle eating a plant-based diet and just maintain? What would you say?
Yeah, you maintain. I'm not the type of person that looks for more muscle.
Okay.
You know, I look to be lean, to fit clothes and, you know, to maintain the same weight is literally just the same thing. I've been weighing the same thing since I was 15 years old, and I have no issues whatsoever with either gaining or losing. And it's just maintaining at a perfect standard. It's exactly where I want it.
All right, so the movie is The Game Changers. Brian James, professional fighter with us here on 720 WGN. Elizabeth Alfano leading the charge. We're going to talk to Elizabeth in a second here. What can you tell me about the movie? Why should people check this out, Brian?
All right, well, yeah, first of all, people can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at BY Jennings. And the movie is our opener because it's literally a game changer. And it's a game changer based on the fact that you have active athletes, world-class athletes that have adopted the plant-based diet and have succeeded, maintained, and done great at these levels while being a plant-based athlete.
I love your Twitter. Just checking it out here. Your pinned tweet is, "It was always me versus the world." Until
what
I found
is, yep,
me. Until
me versus me.
It's me versus me.
Yep.
People don't get that one, that we're really just up against ourselves and how much we can push ourselves and disciplining ourselves. Can you talk a little bit as to what you mean there for somebody who's made it to the highest level in the boxing world, which, by the way, that applies to every other world there is as well?
Yeah, well, you know, it was always me versus the world. Till I found it's me versus me pretty much simplifies it as, you know, you think that a lot of things are against you. You think that a lot of people are against you. You know, they have this saying where they say they, you know, where they don't want you to succeed. They don't want you to do this. But we never really identify. We never can really identify who they are. And if we can't identify who they are, then that they are ourselves. And, you know, we have that mindset in our own self to it, though. We're fighting against our own self or our old self or who we want to be within our new self. So, you know, it's always me versus me. You know, it's never really me versus the world, because the world is just the world and individuals make up the world. And we all are in our own particular world within ourselves, within our own bodies. And we control how we want certain things, how we want certain complaints, criticism to be applied to us. So it's really just us projecting the criticism on ourselves based on, because the criticism that we put on ourselves are much stronger than the criticism from any other person.
No doubt about it. We are our own harshest critics. There's that's all true. All right, before you give it back to Elizabeth here, what'd you have for breakfast today?
For breakfast, I didn't eat breakfast. I think I just had fruit.
What was your biggest meal of the day then?
My biggest meal of the day, I went over to South Restaurant and I had a Beyond Burger, and they had like this vegan Thousand Island sauce that they put on it with the avocado and a nice bun. It was all that.
What do you?
I enjoyed it.
What do you miss the most from the meat world?
Chicken. I have a specific way to say it, you know, based on the way we used to say back when I used to work at the Federal Reserve Bank for 10 years. You know, it was just like, "What you gonna eat today? Chicken?" Because it's almost like, you know, chicken. So chicken is just like it's also like a stereotypical thing of the melanated, aka black community. And, you know, that's just something that, you know, we just couldn't leave alone.
I feel like the black community is more and more embracing the plant-based food. We got, I know John Sally's in there, but yeah. Some guys got to be looking at you cross-eyed. You're doing what?
Yeah, they definitely are looking at me cross-eyed because I'm going against the ethics of, you know, fried chicken and soul food. But, you know, I'm just slowly changing it and still having them understand that, look, soul food is still plant-based. You just got to, you know, get rid of the butters and get rid of the meat, you know, because, you know, you can eat some candy yams or some macaroni and vegan cheese and or some greens and all of these things are still plant-based. You just got to tighten it up a little bit.
Yeah, no, I got you. I get the vegan grilled cheese all the time, and it's flat-out delicious. So,
yep.
All right. Hey, great. Thanks for talking, Brian, and good luck with the movie. Give me back to Elizabeth. I know she's got a couple of words to get in here.
I appreciate you. Take care. Thank you.
Absolutely. Brian Jennings.
Hey, Mark.
Yes, Elizabeth.
Hey, Mark.
Yes.
Okay, I'm getting to somewhere quiet because I've got a lot more details to tell you.
All right, let's do
hold
this.
Hold on there.
We
have more time?
Yeah, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with you, Elizabeth Alfano. Does that sound all right?
Hello?
We're going to take a quick time out. I'm going to put her on hold. We're going to take a quick time out. We'll come back with Elizabeth Alfano in 2 seconds on 720. By that, I mean 2 minutes on 720 WGN. All right. Fun to be with you tonight on 720 WGN. Elizabeth Alfano is a part of a movie called The Game Changers as she's making vegan food all day long and loving her life and living her life in ways that she never thought that she could imagine, and feeling better than she could ever imagine, and just basically being better than you and me. Ain't that right, Elizabeth Alfano?
No, hold on. I never said that exactly.
I know you didn't.
I feel great.
Hey,
no.
That's just me being jealous and wanting to be more like you, and you know that I respect what you do, Elizabeth Alfano. You know this.
Okay, so now what you're really jealous of is that you wanted to be on that red carpet tonight in Los Angeles because I had a great discussion with Chris Paul, 9-time NBA All-Star.
Wow.
And, yeah, and he, first of all, down to earth, nice guy, really, really charismatic and without airs. But, you know, he got into it, like why he wanted to go vegan and how it's been important for him and really, you know, hate to use the phrase, but a game changer in terms of his health. And he's just not going back. And he was out to dinner with LeBron James. They went to a steak place, and he didn't tell LeBron that he was vegan. So everyone's ordering steak, and he orders his cauliflower, and people are looking at him like, dude, what is going on? And he said, you know, they were interested. They were all ears about why he was going vegan, so you don't know who else is going to take the plunge.
Well, they're all trying to raise the bar and be as good as they possibly can be, and LeBron's super competitive, and he's probably doing yoga right now, and then after that he's going to do Pilates, then in the middle of the night he's going to have a kale shake, and then he's going to get up in the morning and do it again. But he does eat meat, and a lot of athletes are making this change. And forget about the athletes, Elizabeth. I mean, you're not a professional athlete, and you feel better than you've ever felt, correct?
Yes, I'll take it to a different kind of conversation. I am not a professional athlete at all, but I do kind of pride myself on aging backwards. I got to tell you, that's my life goal, and I'm sticking to it. So a plant-based diet has really helped me get a lot of energy, get all my doctor's numbers lower, and it helps me do things like I just hiked 51 miles in 5 days with horrible night's sleep in a tent, going up to 13,200 feet. No way I could have done that 5 years ago. No way.
So the movie Game Changers, by the way, congratulations. That's awesome. That's amazing. Good for you.
Again, I know, because my pack was 28 pounds. And I got to tell you, when you go hiking, weigh your pack before you go because it was really too heavy.
Why did you carry 28 pounds, Elizabeth Alfano?
I just, you know, I was like, I'm sure I'll need this. I'm sure I'll need that. And then I picked it up that morning and I was like, oh, this is going to go poorly for me. And then it worked out fine.
Well, you did it, though, so props to you for that. But name one item that you put in there that you didn't end up needing.
Crampons. So I thought because we went so high that there was still snow in the mountains, and I thought I was going to need crampons to get through the ice and snow, but actually I could just do it in my hiking boots.
What are crampons?
They're things that hook into the snow and ice so you don't slide off the mountain. Get with the program, Mark.
So hold on a second here. You were hiking to the top of a mountain where there's ice and whatnot. And
yeah. Yeah, and that was just the end of July.
Wow.
And I'm about to be 53, people. So
this
if that's
good.
Not an ad for aging backwards, I don't know what is.
What?
But the whole Game Changers movie keeps this entire premise in mind.
Yeah, so tell us about the movie.
Right. So it's elite fighting trainer of Navy SEALs, James Wilkes, who hurts himself. He rips his knees, and he's like, okay, what am I going to do for 6 months? And he starts researching the best way to recover, and he realizes that there's all these plant-based athletes that are sticking to a plant-based diet because it gives them a competitive edge. And then he starts looking deeper into the science and realizes why one can recover faster on a plant-based diet and why more and more people are turning to one. And it's just a great movie because it's filled with science. It's got all these athletes in it. Lewis Hamilton, the world champion car racer, and Australian's top runner, and Olympian Dotsie Bausch, and Brian Jennings, who you just heard, the heavyweight boxer. I thought I'd surprise you with that. It's just athlete after athlete after athlete, the defensive line of the Tennessee Titans, and it's all of their stories, strongman Patrick Baboumian, who's breaking records. It's all of their stories about how they thought they had to eat meat to be real men, and then they realized, oh, actually high blood pressure and erectile dysfunction aren't really what I need to be a real man, so I think I'll switch.
I am pro not having erectile dysfunction.
Well, okay, then meat is not your friend, because meat is all about inflammation of the body, and that means erectile dysfunction. So I'm not you personally.
No, I thank you. Yes. You motivated there, Michael Heideman. You're smiling again, thinking about this as we get sophomoric here, but yet real at the same time here.
Yeah, it's very inspiring to hear people who can, you know, go through their lives. I'm just regretting all those millions of hamburgers that I've been eating.
Well, if you stop doing it, right, Elizabeth, it's almost instant that the body starts to recover and that inflammation starts to leave, and all of a sudden things start to perhaps function a little bit like the way they're supposed to, correct?
Well, this is 100% correct, and they go over this in the film. It's a really funny thing, but they take these three college students and they feed them meat burritos one night, and then they feed the three of them bean and avocado burritos the next night, and they measured their erections one night versus the other night during their sleep. It's
Are
a very
serious?
Funny bit. I'm serious. It's a very, very funny, non-graphic bit. And of course, these kids are in college, so they cannot keep a straight face. And you see the numbers with just one meal difference. This is where I think... are you voting that out?
No, we're not voting anything out. I don't know what that sound effect was, but
I don't know where it came from.
But that's kind of traumatic for a college kid. Here you go, buddy. Here's a steak burrito, and now we're going to have a bean burrito, and we're going to check out your manliness.
Yes.
I'm a little uncomfortable. I'm not gonna lie. Go ahead. You got a question, Michael?
Yeah, I have a question. So if you wanted to dive into veganism and you don't know where even to go to, and you want to like eat sweets, because I'm a big sweet eater, what kind of sweets does a vegan go for?
Ooh, I'll tell you. First of all, there's some great bakeries. So if you go to, a little bakery on Broadway and Breyer, it's called... of course, it's going to come to me the minute we hang up. I will get you that information. But Kevin Shooter is the chef, and it's a great little cafe. Or you can go to my website, elizabethalfano.com. I have so many recipes of all the baking stuff that I make. But there's basically vegan options at almost every bakery now.
So, like, are we talking donuts, ice cream?
Could be. Oh, hands down, there's so much great vegan ice cream. Mm. I mean, Ben and Jerry's make like 7 or 9 flavors of vegan ice cream, and all of them are fabulous.
No, it's not as good. Stop yourself.
Oh, that's wrong. Oh, I bet we could taste test it, Mark, and you wouldn't even know the difference.
I will. Okay, we're going to do that, Elizabeth Alfano.
It's on. Oh, yeah, it's on.
There's a place I... sort of by where you were talking about, Tweet up on Broadway, about 5,000 North Broadway, that has a vegan grilled cheese sandwich that is absolutely positively delicious. Just as good as any regular grilled cheese, perhaps even better. But if you're going to tell me that vegan ice cream is as good as regular ice cream, we are going to have a fight. That's just not true.
Prepare to lose.
Okay. We'll have a taste test on that. 708's texting in, by the way, the Breakfast of Champions, a bottle of Jack Daniels and a pack of filterless Camels. So that's
a different conversation.
That's another way to go through life. You go, 708, do you. So where do we see this? Where do we see this movie, Elizabeth Alfano?
Okay, so everyone, first of all, you can go to my website, elizabethalfano.com, and I've got a bunch of interviews with all the cast members of the Game Changers already, because I interviewed them when this film came out at Sundance. Now my interview with
Chris Paul's going to be out in a couple days. But you can also just go to GameChangersMovie.com, and it's going to tell you exactly where you can get your tickets. This movie is out in theaters one day only, September 16th, and then from there it's going to have a digital release, but nobody knows when. So get your tickets for the 16th, and even more important, I'm throwing an after party. I'm throwing the Game Changers after party in Chicago at No Bones Beach Club right after the film on the 16th. So the showing on the 16th is at 7:30, and then the after party starts at 10. So everybody come on over to No Bones Beach Club, and all of that information is also going to be on my website. And if you go to the No Bones Beach Club Facebook page, you'll see the event right after the film.
Spell your name, because Elizabeth Alfano doesn't just spell right off the tongue.
I know, it's a little weird. ELYSABETHALFANO.
.com. All right. Well, it's always great to talk to you, Elizabeth Alfano, and
yes.
All. And it was fun to do a show with you whenever the hell we did that show a couple of months or so back. And I did watch the trailer for Game Changers, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
It was flat out awesome. So congrats on your involvement, and it is. I highly recommend if the film is anywhere close to as good as the trailer. Watching Arnold, did you meet Arnold Schwarzenegger or no?
Okay, so Arnold did not show up. Gus darn it, I did talk to Tony Gonzalez, famed NFL player, and he said this is a great quote. He said he went plant based about 10 years into his football career, and it gave him another 7 years.
I mean,
wow.
he played forever, Tony, and he was healthy. That's a big time endorsement right there. If people are not familiar with the NFL, Tony Gonzalez is a Hall of Fame tight end. He played longer than most, and he was incredibly productive the whole way. So that's big
made
time.
It 17 years. Yeah, and he said he couldn't have done it without a plant based diet, giving him 7 extra years. So. Pretty gosh darn awesome. But and another thing, I don't know if you remember, but when you and I had our show together on WGN, I had on Chef Charity Morgan, who's the chef for the Tennessee Titans defensive line.
I'll never forget it.
Awesome.
I will never forget that moment in radio time. All right. thank you for being on, Elizabeth Alfano. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Talk to you later.
It was my pleasure. Elizabeth Alfano, check out her website, and the movie is Game Changers. Making the change from the meat world over to the plant-based world. I love meat. It's hard to move, but I think I'm at least a reductionist at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Try to eat as little red meat as possible, just making it a treat whenever I do it.
It's important.
It's
moderation.
Important. Moderation. Well, and it's also we got the planet to be concerned about, which is why we're going to talk to Dave Rogers coming up after the 12:30 news. So that is straight ahead. I think you'll enjoy the conversation on where we can go to make this world a better place. We'll do that after news. 720 WGN. Mark Harmon with you tonight. Great to have you on board. He's the deputy regional director for the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign. And he's a man that I orient towards when I try to think of what the world should be, especially from renewable energy, the climate in general, what we're going to have for ourselves and for our kids and for our grandkids down the line. His name is Dave Rogers, and he joins us now on WGN. Dave, this is the first time we've done this. I'm excited to have you on.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here and offer any insight I can.
So tell the world, the WGN world specifically, why coal is a bad thing. Just for those who don't understand, why do we got to get rid of coal? Can you just lay that out and feel free? We've got time.
Yeah. I mean, there's a myriad of reasons why coal is a bad thing. I think from a health perspective, coal causes problems from the moment they dig it out of the ground to what they do with the waste after it's burned. So in order to extract a lot of coal, they use what's called mountaintop removal, where they essentially blow off the top of a mountain and dig in the insides to get that coal out. And that causes water pollution, a bunch of health concerns for workers who work in those mines, and other associated problems. And then when they burn coal, that it leads to a number of different types of pollution, things that cause respiratory problems, asthma. It's been linked to cancer and other sorts of issues. And then it also releases a lot of carbon dioxide, which is the main thing that is accelerating climate change here on the planet. And that's not even, unfortunately, that's not even the end of it. Then the waste, which is commonly referred to as coal ash, is a compound of a bunch of toxic substances, things like lead, mercury, arsenic, selenium, and that currently is largely sitting in open pit basins next to riverways and right on top of our groundwater. And across the country, those coal ash pits are polluting drinking water sources and waterways all across the country as well. So the problems are significant. They are across the entire process. And then to top it all off, I think the other thing to, for your listeners to know is that it's just an, actually a more expensive way to generate electricity. Technology has advanced today where not only are things like wind power and solar power cleaner and don't contribute to climate change, but they're actually less expensive. So in a lot of cases, customers of electric utilities are paying extra money to pollute themselves. So it just doesn't really make any sense today to rely on coal as a major source of electricity.
So if you want to follow Dave Rogers on Twitter, you do it at DavidRogers27. And he's always putting out different pieces of information that I find incredibly interesting. And it seems like you've been going at Duke Energy now for nearly a decade, and you live in the Carolinas. Explain what Duke is doing, or has been doing, or is unwilling to do.
Yeah, so Duke Energy is the one of the largest electric utilities in the country. They serve a large portion of the Carolinas, down where I live, but they also have customers in Florida, Indiana, Kentucky, and Ohio. So they're one of the biggest ones. And they have released long-term plans in a number of their states for the in the last few months. And unfortunately, Duke seems unwilling to open their eyes and think a little bit more creatively about how they can deliver for their customers in a way that's cleaner, more affordable, and better for the communities that they serve. So they are proposing to continue to burn coal for another 30 plus years until about 2048 or so. And they are really reluctant to invest in clean energy at the level we need them to avoid the worst impacts of climate change.
So rewinding back, you just said in our first in your first answer that it would be we'd actually save money by not using coal. It would be more, you know, we'd be more efficient and we would not be spending as much. But Duke's unwilling to do that. So for them specifically, is it better financially? Because when you don't understand things, you always follow the money, right?
Yeah, yeah. And to put in a kind of to give a real world example that might help illustrate this. So Duke has a coal plant right outside Charlotte, which is their headquarters, their national headquarters. And that coal plant costs about $67 to produce a megawatt hour. And a megawatt hour is essentially the amount of energy that a house uses over a month. So produce that 1 month's worth of electricity at your house costs them about $67 than that coal plant. They've signed contracts recently for solar power that have been more like $37 a megawatt hour, so almost half the cost. So that's how much of a difference we're talking. And that's a pretty simplistic example, but it just goes to show that there's better ways to do it. To answer your question about why they're doing this, yeah, I think it largely comes down to money. In North Carolina, as an example, Duke's got about $5 billion tied up in coal plants that are likely uneconomic. So they aren't the cheapest way to produce electricity, but they've all that money tied up in them. And the way that they can profit, get a return on investment, is continue to run those until they've fully collected the full value of those plants. There's ways to overcome that, but at least at this point, Duke isn't willing to discuss how can we solve this problem while accelerating the retirements of those coal plants and getting us off coal.
Well, it almost seems like we have to do with a company like Duke to incentivize it is have the government saying, look, I know you made these investments. We will actually bail you out, similar to the way they bailed out the banks, which people didn't want, but was actually a smart thing at the time. We'll bail you out, and we want you to orient to the cleanest way of energy, and we will incentivize you to do it. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think there some of these investments that Duke has made in those coal plants, I think were reasonable investments at the time that they made them. You know, spending money to build and maintain coal plants 20, 30 years ago made sense. It was the largest source of energy. But we shouldn't let the fact that they made sense 30 years ago dictate the decisions we're making today. So there are actual opportunities to do exactly what you're saying. I wouldn't necessarily term them as bailouts. I think you could, if they were reasonable and prudent investments, then we should let the utility recover those costs back. And there's financial tools that would allow them to do that, retire those plants quickly. They get their money back. Customers get lowered electricity bills because they replace the coal with cheaper electricity. And folks who are interested in climate change and cleaner energy also get the opportunity to have cleaner air and help accelerate that transition away from dirty fossil fuels like coal and frack gas.
Dave Rogers is the Deputy Regional Director for the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign as we're talking about climate change here on 720 WGN. Where are we at right now, Dave? I mean, Greenland's melting. Hurricane Dorian's barreling in. I keep on hearing that we have enough. There's time. And then I'm sitting there thinking, like, nobody knows exactly what is going to happen. You can't just map this out. There's no playbook for it. So I know you're making an educated guess, too. But, like where are we right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's not time to delay action. There's time to transition, but the action really needs to start happening now. And it actually is underway, but we need to continue to accelerate the transition away from fossil fuels, and we actually need to speed it up. So I would agree with the thought that there is time, but that doesn't mean we don't need to actually do anything today. We need to put the gas pedal to the floor, so to speak, and actually start to accelerate that transition. So most of the science says we need to fully decarbonize by 2050, and that's across the entire economy. So that's electricity, but not just electricity. That's transportation. So get rid of gas cars by 2050. Make all of our buildings fossil fuel free, so eliminate gas heat, gas stoves, gas water heaters, move all of that to electricity as well, and make sure all the electricity we're using to power all the transportation, all our cars and trucks and our homes is clean, renewable energy. So we got to do that by 2050, and with that, we also need to decarbonize by probably somewhere between 70 to 80% in the electricity sector by 2030. So we can't just wait, obviously, till 2050 and then like a few years before that make this transition. It matters not only where we get, but how we get there. So I think the biggest things we need to do is, number one, eliminate coal and stop building new gas infrastructure to power our lives. If gas was ever a bridge fuel, we've gotten off that bridge. We need to rely on clean sources of energy. The good news is we have the technology to do that. We don't need any necessarily additional new inventions. The costs are competitive and in most cases cheaper. It's not a technological problem. It really is a political problem. So we really need our leaders to step up and take additional steps to make that happen. And it's happening all over the country. So I have a little hope places like Washington and California, New Mexico have committed to 100% clean energy. places like Illinois have passed really visionary legislation to promote clean energy as well. So we're seeing it happen all over. And then in some places, utilities are just making these decisions on their own. NIPSCO, which is the utility that serves the Northwest Indiana, so probably have some listeners there, did an analysis and figured out that the best way to meet their customers' needs in the least cost manner was to eliminate all their coal by 2028 and replace it all with things like wind power, storage, and solar power. So we're seeing that effort happening, but we need more utilities, more political leaders to actually help push it forward so we can start to accelerate it at the pace we need to avoid the worst impacts of climate change.
1249, hope you're having a great night. We're continuing our conversation with the Deputy Regional Director for the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign, Dave Rogers, my good friend. Dave, how do you get it, like try to talk to somebody who just flat out doesn't believe that climate change is real and they just don't want to move and they want their life to stay exactly the same?
Yeah, I mean, I think the my thoughts on that are, one is the science is the science. So people can choose not to believe the science or not, but it's still the science. It doesn't change the evidence that's out there. And then the other thing I would say is that I think more and more part of the reason why thoughts around climate change are shifting, even among some political leaders, yeah, there are the folks who say it's a hoax, but even some conservative leaders who in the past were climate deniers have kind of shifted to, okay, maybe the climate's changing, but humans aren't contributing. And then they've shifted to, okay, maybe humans are contributing to it, but how much is it going to cost to actually do what we need to do? And does it make sense to invest that money? So, and I think the largest reason why that shift is happening is that people are seeing this on the ground. Climate change is here today. This is not some future thing that's going to impact our kids. We're experiencing this every day all across the country, whether it's massive wildfires out in California, whether it's the floods that happened across the Mississippi region that really devastated the farming season for a huge swath of the country, whether it's larger, more intense hurricanes. Here in North Carolina, we've had 2 500-year floods in the last 4 years. So things like that start to happen, then even people who might have been skeptics start to understand. I think some of the you just need to talk to people that have had to experience it. So farmers, medical professionals who are seeing, you know, tropical diseases come into clinics in places where they didn't exist before. So I think, you know, the facts are just changing on the ground. And I think over time that will convince more and more people. Hopefully it will convince enough folks. So I think between the facts on the ground, folks who are economically driven, just the simple economics around clean energy being cheaper can be enough to move us. And we're just not going to convince everyone that climate change is real and the existential crises of our time, which is what I think it is. But if we get enough folks, we can overcome the massive disinformation campaign that the polluters have waged against us for decades. And I think that's one thing to note, like most people didn't come to this decision on their own. This has been a part of a concerted disinformation campaign from fossil fuel industries, oil and gas, the coal industry, in some cases utilities, that have sought to suppress information. And the government was talking about dealing with climate change back in the 80s. And we're close to actually starting to take some steps, but they weren't successful at that point, and we're now kind of paying the price for that lack of action so many years ago.
So let's wrap up with this. For those who are listening right now thinking, you know what, all right, I will make some changes. How can I help? I'd like you to speak to like what the average person, outside of going out and voting and using your power that way, just day-to-day things that an individual can do, what would you recommend? And just throw some fear out there, too. Like, if we don't do anything, in your mind, what does this look like in 10, 15, 20 years?
Okay, well, I'll answer the latter question first because I don't want to end on such a depressing note. But if we fail to act in at the level that we need to avoid the worst impacts of climate change, we are talking about just a kind of massive displacement of people. So there's a lot of talk about refugees coming from the Middle East and coming into the European Union, America, et cetera. Immigration is a big kind of issue right now. At this point, we're talking about, you know, hundreds of thousands of refugees to millions of refugees. Well, if climate change ends up at the level that it could, if we fail to act, we're talking about hundreds of millions of refugees. So just imagine displacement of, you know, somewhere up on the upwards of the level of like half of the United States of America globally. On a global perspective. So that's going to cause kind of catastrophic strain on our infrastructure and systems. It's also climate change could have a pretty big impact on the agriculture industry and actually start shrinking the amount of food we're able to grow and supply to the world, which could put additional strains. The military here in the United States sees it as the largest kind of threat to peace. So we're talking about catastrophe unlike anything humanity has experienced if we fail to act. So that's what's at stake. And that we're talking about that happening in the next 50 to 100 years. So there's people who are alive today that will experience that level of catastrophe. So it could be pretty frightening. What people can do, I mean, there's a bunch of steps people can take in their kind of individual manner, but I don't think that is the most important one. So obviously people doing things like riding their bikes more, moderating, you know, using energy efficient light bulbs, investing in clean energy, rooftop solar, if they have a house or wherever they live that makes sense for that. But I think while those things are good, we can't all take the steps that it's going to take to actually avoid those worst impacts. So we do need to have coordinated political action. So I would say the best things that people can do are vote. Number one is just vote in every single election, state, local, federal. The second thing I would do is make sure your candidates are talking about climate change and make this an issue that is a determining factor in whether or not people will be elected or not. You know, climate has been an issue in past elections, but it's never the top issue. And because of that, unfortunately, they haven't taken it as seriously in places like D.C. as we needed them to. And then the third thing I would say is stay involved in between elections. So it's not just about voting for the right people, getting them in office, and then just letting them kind of do their thing. We need to keep people's feet to the fire. So getting good people elected, putting enough pressure on them so they do the things that they said they were going to do on the campaign trail are the biggest things that we can do. Ultimately, as I said earlier, it's a political problem. We've got the technology, we've got the capabilities, we have the resources to solve this problem. We just need the political will from our leaders to actually push it forward and to force them to listen to their citizens who have elected them and to stop listening to massive industrial polluting fossil fuel industries who are making millions out of or billions from the status quo.
Dave Rogers, Deputy Regional Director for the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign. Dave, really appreciate the time tonight. Thanks for being on and thanks for the message for everyone out there. Super, super important. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for giving me a chance to talk about it.
Let's talk about it more. 312-981-7200. If you have any thoughts on this, I would love to hear them. Let's move some things forward. 720 WGN.